I'm going to call the Property Tax Division to order. And thank you to all who were patiently waiting in the hallway as the previous committee wrapped up its business. And today we have a lot of local bills again. We've given them each a maximum of 8 minutes to explain what they need. And we're going to start with, we're not quite yet at a quorum, so we'll wait on the approval of the minutes. And we'll go to House File 1483, Representative Nelson. And Representative Marco, would you be willing to move this bill?
Madam Chair, so move House File 1483 for possible inclusion into the division report.
Thank you. Now the bill is before us, and Representative Nelson, why don't you tell us about this proposal?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm carrying this bill as a favor to somebody I know, and it's not my area, my district, and I have with me Linda Wolf from the City of Cambridge, this is a bill for sales tax, our local sales tax for the City of Cambridge, and I will let Ms. Wolf explain the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Wolf. Please introduce yourself for the tape so they recognize your voice and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Linda Wolf, and I am the City Administrator for the City of Cambridge. It is a pleasure to be here before you today. The city's referendum on the local option sales tax passed with 62% of our voters supporting the referendum. The referendum is important to our community for three purposes: library construction, street improvements, and regional park improvements. The new library would serve the residents of the cities of Cambridge and Asante, in addition to the surrounding townships. The East Central Regional Library System headquarters will be co-located within the library. East Central Regional Library System serves Aiken, Chisago, Isanti, Kennebec, Mille Lacs, and Pine counties. An existing building will be remodeled for the library, saving approximately $4 to $5 million over new construction. The local option sales tax would also fund necessary collector street improvements within our community. Our municipal state aid funding is not sufficient to reconstruct or improve our collector streets. From 2020 to 2032, the city has $41 million in street improvement costs. The local option sales tax portion will reduce the property tax levy needed to pay for these improvements. Cambridge serves as a regional recreation center for township and city residents. A portion of this tax would be used to construct additional baseball, softball, and multi-purpose use fields for teams from the five-county area. It would also connect the Cambridge-Isani Bike Walk Trail to City Park, install additional pickleball courts, and cover our outdoor refrigerated ice rinks. Our community strongly supports these amenities, and we thank you for your consideration. Representative Johnson, our district's representative, has decided not to author this bill on the city's behalf because he does not support a tax increase, and he views the sales tax bill as a tax increase, and we respectfully understand his opinion. Included in your handouts today, which I gave to the committee administrators, are numerous letters of support for this legislation, and I will stand for any questions you may have.
Great. Do members have any questions of our witness or the author? Seeing none. Representative Rundbeck.
I wasn't paying complete attention on the last 3-4 days, but it seems to me I read there was some concern about the wording on the referendum, the ballot question itself, and do we have people to speak to that, or what is the current
Ms.
status?
Ms. Wolf, would you like to answer the question that was raised about the wording of the ballot question?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Runbeck. I am unaware of any legal issues with the ballot question. A resolution was passed by City Council that included all of these projects in it and was put before the voters, and that's what passed by 62%.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns on this bill, House File 1483? Seeing none, any summary comments, Representative Nelson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill, and hope I get your support.
Thank you. We now have a quorum, and with that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1483 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Division's property tax report. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we'll take a moment, now that we have a quorum, to act on the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of February 25th?
Madam Chair, so moved the February 25th, 2019 minutes.
Great. Any corrections or additions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay? The minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. And we will continue on with our long list of proposals, and I appreciate the committee's indulgence on these. Next, we have House File 1456, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
And can we have a motion to bring the House File 1456 before the committee?
So moved.
Representative Carlson moves that House File 1456 be considered for possible inclusion in the division report. And we'll act on laying that over at the end. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 1456 is going to allow the city of Scanlon a half-cent sales tax. They've never relied on any external funding for their or additional funding for their community, and the wonderful community adjacent to Cloquet, Minnesota. They're trying to develop a stronger business base there and tap into some of these resources for some real improvements in their city streets and infrastructure here. So that's a short description of it. The city of Scanlon has authorized this. You should, in your packet, you should have a statement from the city of Scanlon. It's actually the resolution passed by the city council requesting this half-cent sales tax. It's a wonderful little community. I actually lived there for 23 years of my adult life and raised two children there, and they're just trying to improve their community. So that's all I really have.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. Do members have any questions on House File 1456? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for with concerns on this bill? Seeing that there is not a lot of discussion, Representative Carlson renews his motion that House File 1456 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Great. And now we have House File 1498, Representative Anderson. Welcome to the committee, Representative Anderson, and can we have a motion to bring House File 1498 before the committee? Representative Petersburg moves that House File 1498 be considered for possible for being laid over and possible inclusion in the division report. Welcome, and please explain this proposal for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Good to be back with you again today. This is a request from the city of Glenwood, Minnesota, about 140 miles northwest of here. And I would just encourage you, if you've ever been out that way, I know Representative Hertas has been up that way, and maybe Ms. Dalton as well, but when you come into Glenwood from the east, you're coming over that last hill and look down and see Lake Minnewaska, one of the, I think, the 11th largest lakes in the state. It's a gorgeous sight, so come on out someday and take a look at Glenwood, Minnesota. This is a sales tax, a local sales tax request by the city. It was voted on, Madam Chair, by the residents of Glenwood. And with me today is the Glenwood City Administrator to explain the bill and what they'd use the funds for in Glenwood.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Dave Iverson, the City Administrator for the City of Glenwood. And with me is Gene Wenstrom. He does grant writing and economic development work for the City of Glenwood. We are requesting that the committee consider our local sales and use tax of 0.5%, $2.8 million over 20 years, whichever comes first, to assist us in the funding of various items in our park, specifically Barsness Park. We are looking to use part of the funding, if it's approved, for phase two and phase three of a local improvement project, street project, which is a total reconstruct of 4th Street Northeast and 4th Street Southeast within the city of Glenwood, which will replace water mains, sewer mains, service lines to properties, new storm sewer, new bituminous street curb and gutter. Also to reconstruct and enhance the parks and trails that we currently have, bike trails and walking trails that would lead to the city of Villard and their community and their resorts. Also, park and trails enhancements that would lead to the west, which would go to the city of Starbuck and ultimately to Glacial Lake State Park. We are also seeking funding to make some other improvements to our park, which is used as a regional park by most of our youth activities in the form of new ball fields, baseball, softball, and multi-use, like a soccer field. And lastly, to assist us in upgrading or making improvements to our current city hall and police department to make improvements that would enhance operational activities of both city hall and the police department, and then to increase public safety for the staff and public. And that is a summary of what we would use the funds for, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And are you, do we have a third or a second testifier or witness, or just available for as a resource? Thank you for coming. Members, any questions? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question would be to the City of Glenwood, do you have a assessment policy, and how do you apply the street reconstruction costs? Is this bill going to pay for all of the construction or part of it? Could you clarify that?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Iverson.
Thank you. The city does have a assessment policy, and we would just be looking for a portion of this to assist us in the general fund portion, which would be the street portion of the construction on 4th Street.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. Could you be a little bit more specific? I mean, do you have like a 25% of the cost is assessed to the benefiting property, or 50%, or, you know, what is your policy?
Our policy, Mr. Iverson. Madam Chair, Representative, our policy is 20% at a minimum according to state law if we do an assessment project, yes.
All right. Thank you.
And Representative Bernardi had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question regarding, do you know how much from the locals the percent would pay the sales tax versus people visiting or from the region?
I do not.
Mr. Iverson.
Madam Chair, Representative, I do not.
Okay. Any further questions? Anyone from the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 1498? Seeing no one, any summary comments, Representative Anderson?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I think folks that come to Lake Amelia or Villard might help out and chip in on this, too. Glenwood is our regional center for Polk County. And I would add, Madam Chair, that the city just finished a major project, a complete streets project, and the main street was torn up for much of the summer. And a lot of the funds of the city went to help finance all those infrastructure projects. So this is needed by the city of Glenwood to continue those projects and work on their side streets and things like that in the park as well. So appreciate your support.
And with that, Representative Petersburg renews his motion that House File 1498 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Hamilton, House File 1485 is next. And who would like to move? Representative Hertas moves House File 1485 to bring it before the committee for consideration in the division report. And we do have an A1 amendment. Representative Hamilton, is that an author's amendment?
Yes, it is. Looking at staff, yes, it is. No.
It's a technical amendment.
Okay. Yes. Thank
you. Madam Chair, I'll move the amendment.
Representative Hertas moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome, and please tell us about your project.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. With me today, I have Mayor Mike Cooley, and along with the city administrator, Steve Robinson, to answer our questions. This is indeed a local option sales tax for the city of Worthington. So at this point in time, I would like to share with the committee, we did pass a referendum. Over 67% The voters did come out in support of that, 67%. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn over to my testifier.
Great. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Mike Cooley. I'm the mayor of Worthington, Minnesota. Chair Loeffler and members of the Property and Local Tax Committee, thank you for this hearing today. City of Worthington Local Option Sales Tax. Worthington is a regional center and destination for employment, recreation, and shopping, drawing visitors from rural Minnesota, Iowa, and South Dakota. Like many regional hubs outside the metro area, Worthington struggles with a shortage of employees to fill the needs of our businesses. It's critical for our economic viability to retain and attract a strong workforce. Members of the City Council began reevaluating our role in economic development and how the needs have shifted from creating jobs to focusing on creating employees. With that in mind, elected officials and city staff held a series of listening sessions with employers and, more importantly, various groups of employees and students, asking them what role could the city play to make Worthington a more attractive place to live and work. Many of the participants in the sessions live outside of Worthington, but work, play, and shop locally. And now I'd like to turn it over to our city administrator for specifics on our option sales tax.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Robinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. The common theme from all of our listening sessions was the desire to add to, enhance, or improve many of the quality of life amenities that we have. Through these listening sessions, a list of regionally significant and also locally significant projects was developed that provide amenities for individuals of all ages, family status, and cultures. As Worthington has become more culturally diverse, the recreation and leisure activities have changed much differently than when I was growing up there a number of decades ago. We recognize the need that the city has to change in how we fulfill the needs of our residents and visitors. And with that, through that public engagement, we identified a number of projects that were desired by the listening session. And through that, the City Council narrowed the list down to six specific projects that were scoped and budgeted. They include a recreation field house, which is large enough for indoor soccer. We had a facility that accommodated indoor soccer that unfortunately closed about a year ago. During the winter, on weekends, they average between 100 and 150 individuals coming in to play indoor soccer on each Saturday and Sunday. Other projects include improvements to the Outdoor Aquatic Center, improvements to the Ice Arena, 10th Street Pavilion, which is our farmer's market, which is filled every Tuesday with vendors and shoppers, park and recreation improvements, and lake water quality improvements. Worthington had a local option sales tax that started in May of 2009 and terminated in September of this past year. The sales tax that we're asking for would initiate in January of 2020, complying with Minnesota Statute 297A.99 that prohibits a city from imposing a local option sales tax for a period of 1 year after the previous one was terminated. City Council was resolute in transparency and being specific. I think you have a copy of the ballot question that was spelled out, showing that the projects that were identified, the term, the number of years, and the dollar amount to be raised. I will now stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Zhang had a question.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, are you planning to have a few more Hmong New Year events down there in Worthington? And so I imagine there's a growing diversity down in Worthington, and you're planning to have more events down there.
Yeah. Who would like to respond?
Yeah. We are diversity in Worthington. We're the second most diverse city in the state of Minnesota behind St. Paul. We're about 50% immigrant, which has changed over the last 40 years. But they provide workers, and we need to provide amenities that we can attract those, but also other employees as well. Our school district is about 70% immigrant, so we've worked hard at it, and we just need a little bit of help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, yes. Representative, we've hosted a regional tournament of both soccer and I don't exactly know the name of the game where you, it's like volleyball, but you kick the ball. Both in Worthington and for the Hmong community. You're welcome to come down and play.
Representative Zahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to reiterate, I think it's one area that I became aware about in the past couple of years. You know, there's a growing immigrant community down there, and I know Representative Hamilton has been very gracious in helping the communities out there, and I think he has a hog farm. But I haven't gotten an invite yet, so I'm waiting for one. Thank you.
Thank you. And I had a question. I understand from staff that the total of projects is $20 million, and your ask is for $25 million. Mr. Robinson, is that financing costs? Or?
Madam Chair, that's exactly what it is. It was we decided to approach it that we would finance the project so that we could ensure the cost up front. And based on our calculations, it would take $25 million in revenue over 15 years to pay for $20 million worth of projects rather than put the financing cost on the backs of the taxpayers through additional revenue and extending out the length of the sales tax.
Okay. Any other questions? Anyone else? Oh, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe the question is for Ms. Dalton. I was reading the bill language, and the bill explicitly suspends any limitations that the city might have, including in their home rule charter. Is there, what are the particulars of that? What are the things that are included in the charter that this bill is suspending in order to pave the way, pun intended, for project to go forward?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know that there's anything in their charter. That's just standard language if we know it's a home rule charter city, because we don't want to grant authority and then find out there's something in a city charter. And I do know that in a couple of these bills we've had the home rule charter language. I'm not even 100% sure Worthington is a home rule charter city. If they are, that's why it's there.
Mr. Robinson.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, we are a home rule charter city. There is nothing in the charter that would prohibit a local option sales tax. And like Ms. Dalton said, it is standard language that goes in these bills.
Thank you both.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anyone who would like in the audience who would like to testify for with concerns of on House File 1485? If not, Representative Hertas renews his motion that House File 1485, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Sorry. Any concluding remarks? I should have offered that to you.
That's right. I just want to say thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Thank you. Great. Thank you very much. And next, we have a number of tax increment financing proposals. Those are the first ones that we've brought before the committee this year. And we've asked our House research staff to give us a little introduction on how the tax increment finance laws work. Most proposals for TIF funding, TIF is its acronym, TIF, don't come before us. The only bills that come before us for tax increment financing are those that want an exemption from the general law. And so Ms. Hagler will walk us through that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm just going to go over a few of the generals about this, and then I'll get a little bit more specific into the general laws that are proposed to be amended or for these special districts. I'll just get into how that generally works. So tax increment financing is a development tool used to support local development, redevelopment, and housing development. It enables development authorities to finance development activities using incremental property taxes generated by the increasing value of the new development. When a district is certified in its first year, the net tax capacity of the parcels within the district area are frozen at their current amount, as well as the current property tax rate. As the net tax capacity increases over time due to development that is occurring or because of general property inflation, the property taxes paid by the increase in value is dedicated and paid to the development authority who's doing the development. In your folders, you were given actually two spreadsheets that are longer, and they show the types of district. They're different only in the very last column that shows the number of districts by breakdown of the year. One is from 2015 and one is from 2017, so that 2017 one has just updated information on how many and which types of districts there are. So they also briefly explained some of the district's features and limitations. And this information is gathered by the state auditor every year. They prepare a report for the tax committee, and that discusses existing districts and their compliance. And so as you can see, as of December 2017, there were 1,651 districts statewide, and the majority of them were actually in Greater Minnesota. And as Chair Loeffler said, municipalities are able to create the districts on their own without coming to the legislature. However, there are certain instances when they need an exception to general law, or if a district has yet to be created and will foresee needing special circumstances, that have to come to get special approval. So now I'll talk about the general rules. And after each bill in the summary, it kind of talks about this as well. So the first rule is what's called the five-year rule. And this rule requires that development activity in the district is completed within 5 years of the district certification. After those 5 years, increment generated must go towards paying off obligations incurred by funding the activity that had been taken place or on items to the extent permitted by the pooling rules and cannot be used for funding new activities. And then once the obligations are paid, the district must be decertified so those parcels can return to the tax roll. And the rationale there for that is when districts produce more increment than is needed to pay for the development than the planners had originally thought, development authorities have used the extra increment for other activities rather than paying off obligations. So this five-year rule sets that so districts aren't just staying off the tax rolls for extended period of time. The second general rule that'll be brought up today is the pooling rule. And pooling refers to the use of tax increment for activity outside of the district borders from the district where they're collected. So current law permits increment to be spent outside of the district on other activities. However, that's subject to percentage limits. For all districts except redevelopment districts, it's 20% can be spent outside of the district, and for redevelopment districts, it's 25%, and the administrative expenses count for that outside of the district. The four-year knockdown rule we'll also be looking at today is requires that some sort of activity, be it demolition, rehabilitation, or renovation, be conducted on each parcel within the district within the first 4 years of its certification. If there's no activity on the parcel, you wouldn't be able to use the increment generated anymore, and that next net tax capacity of it is removed from the district, the district's net tax capacity as a whole. And then many of the bills that we're looking at today deal with redevelopment districts, and as you can see on the spreadsheet, it outlines a little bit of the limitations there, and they do have a blight finding that they have to have before they can be certified, and they're meant to last for 25 years. And they are the most common type of district.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Hagler? I think one of the key things to realize on this is that while a district isn't, or a set of parcels of land is in tax increment financing. Other than the base value, which still gets divided as it was when the district was established, the increased increment just goes to the development costs. It doesn't get split with the increase in tax value, doesn't get shared with the schools or the counties or special taxing districts. And so that's why there's a variety of limitations on length, so that ultimately they go back onto the tax base. That's the goal of development, is to increase the tax base of a community generally. So any questions? If not, we're going to hear our first tax increment bill. And as people come up to present this, I know there's a temptation for cities to want to ooh and ahs with the pretty pictures and you know, what grand and wonderful thing is going to show up after the TIF project is done. That's actually a decision for the city council and the mayor to make about whether this is a good or not good development for their particular community. What we want to hear in the testimony in particular is why the current limitations do not fit for this particular project. Why do they need an exception to any of the particular rules that Ms. Hagler just went through? Because that's what we're going to have to decide on, is whether or not to grant exceptions to the various provisions in the general state TIF law. So if we can pay attention to that, and if our witnesses would address that, we'd really appreciate that. And our first bill up is House File 655. Representative Cantrell, welcome to the committee. And can I have a motion to bring House File 655 before the committee? Ah, Representative McDonald moves House File 655 to be brought before the committee and considered to for possible layover and inclusion in the division report. Welcome to the committee, Representative Cantrell. Tell us about the Burnsville proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to join you. So House File 655 is a bill that would establish TIF designation for 36 parcels of land in Burnsville. And I do have a couple folks from the city with me today, but it appears that they are still yet absconded to the Senate. So we might have to...
Representative Cantrell, we could move to a different bill and temporarily lay this one over until your witnesses come. That would be fine.
Oh, Madam Chair, thank you so much for your indulgence.
Okay. With that, I will temporarily lay over House File 655, awaiting the witnesses. I'm sorry there's a juggling going on with the other tax committee. Representative Stephenson, House File 176, are your witnesses here? They are. Fantastic. Come on up. And let's have a motion to bring House File 176 before the building. Representative Herr moves that House File 176 be brought before the committee for consideration in the division report. Welcome to the committee, and please tell us about the project in Champlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's my absolute pleasure to be before you today to talk about one of the premier redevelopment opportunities that we have in the northern suburbs of Minneapolis and St. Paul. This project deals with land that is right on the Mississippi River, right near where Highway 169 crosses the river from Champlin into Anoka. And one thing I want to tell you off the bat is this is just really beautiful land. It's kind of a rarity. Most of the land in this area is privately owned homes, single family homes. This is one of the last real spots where we have an opportunity to imagine a space for people to have access to the river and engage with the river. And it's really exciting what the city of Champlin has been working on really for a long time. And so what House File 176 does is it actually just extends the time frame of an existing TIF district that we've had in place already, expands the footprint a little bit as well. But you can see that this is a TIF district that's already been in place, and it's kind of coming to fruition at this time. So we just need a little bit more time to finish things up and really get them going. But it's a great project that the community is really excited about. I also want to tell you that this proposal came through this committee during the last biennium and had the was included in the House tax bill in the past year. Unfortunately, it was in the large omnibus bill that was vetoed by the governor, and so we're back again this year to make our request again. But it's a bill that's very important to the community. Representative Marquardt was kind enough to come up to Champlin a couple weeks ago to hear from members of the community in Champlin about tax issues generally, and we had a really great discussion about a lot of issues, but he also heard at that just how important this particular issue is to people who live in Champlin, and the opportunity to have this project go forward is just absolutely critical. So thank you for your time, and I have with me here today the mayor of Champlin, Ryan Karasik, who I think can tell you a little bit more about it.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor, and please introduce yourself for the record and tell us a little bit about the exceptions that are needed.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to speak with you today. I hardly can add more than what Representative Stevenson added to that as far as what this project is. And I have to say that this project is redefining an opportunity for our community. For the last 20 years, we've been working towards redeveloping our riverfront. A third of our border is a river, yet for many years we've kind of lost that identity of being on the river. And this project, the redevelopment project in this tax increment district, is going to provide us that vehicle to redevelop the area and provide the city of Champlin and the surrounding areas. It's the headwater of the regional pool for the area, for Coon Rapids, for Ramsey, for Dayton, and Anoka, and even the northern part of Brooklyn Park, to be able to utilize this area as a recreational area. And we're excited for the opportunity to do this, and we were grateful for the opportunity to get it passed last year. Unfortunately, we ended up at the short end of the stick at the end of the session, but I'm certainly grateful to be here and what this project and what this tax increment bill will do for our community by extending the timeline. We unfortunately ended up starting it at a time when the economy was faltering, and that kind of dried up a lot of opportunities for us to develop it. Now the economy is booming again. We're hoping that we can continue the development to make it a reality. The last 2 years, as well as many of you probably know, Champlin was in the middle of a significant highway project, and that highway project made that area challenging, and we used that area as a staging area for MnDOT to provide them an opportunity to stage their equipment, stage dirt, and all the other stuff that they needed to have. So it didn't provide us the opportunity to effectively market and promote that area with all that equipment going on there. So anyway, again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, and I would respectfully hope that you'd support this bill. Thank you.
Are there questions on this proposal? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know we're not supposed to be concerned about what the project is, but nowhere does it say. So what type of project is it going to be when finished?
Thank you. I'll add a little bit onto that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Madam Chair, committee member, thank you for the opportunity. It is an area of we're looking at different options as far as housing components. We're looking at options as far as retail. We're looking at options as far as a restaurant and a number of park improvements to the area. That's going to be kind of a transition from a park improvement project that we have and that we've had slated for many years, transition that into the housing, retail, and restaurant opportunities that we have on the river there.
Thank you. And Representative Petersburg has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is probably more of a comment and a word of caution. You know, as we see more and more of these in which we're extending out some of the terms and requirements, it may be worth us to look at the overall policy of TIF and how it's regulated as well. But one of the things that I'm concerned with is as we allow more and more projects to go beyond its time before they get pulled back into the tax rolls, it means that the city is without those taxing dollars and then are looking to the state for more local government aid and so forth to make up for that. And so we kind of go down a little slippery slope, and where these aren't a lot of projects, I'm just a little concerned that we haven't really thought through how the big impact is going to be later down the road and whether or not we ought to have some discussion about just overall tax increment financing legislation as well. So it's just a comment, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? I have a question that maybe can go to Ms. to our staff, since I'm still learning some of these things as well. When it's been an existing tax increment district and we extend it, and this one allows the addition of parcels, it's kind of changing sort of the proposals, is it typical that when we extend it, we also have other components that get added on rather than just the additional time?
Madam Chair, I believe it is common to not just extend the duration of the district as a whole, but to also extend certain components. Looking back a few years at the ones that did pass, it seems like there were multiple components to them.
Thank you. And then, Mayor, is it Kurdain? I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch your last name.
Krasik.
Thank you. Mayor, the summary says that you want to exempt the district from the requirement that starting in the sixth year, you have to start using it to pay back the costs. And since you don't have a proposal yet, I'm wondering why you think that you need that exemption at this point.
Well, I think, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity. I believe that the extension of the timeline is because we didn't have an opportunity as we were developing it to start the development process in that area. To extend that timeline when we're working with potential developers, that we have that ability to negotiate in the tax increment district. And to answer another question as far as the extending the parcels of the location, to give you a little bit of background on that, what it has to deal with specifically is extending the adjacent area for infrastructure that we need to do in order to help promote and develop the rest of the project as well.
Okay. Thank you. And Representative Hertas has one more question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, a comment. TIF has been around for such a very long time, and we certainly have seen more swings in economic cycle, but costs have gone up. The value of a dollar has gone up. The numbers that we continue to see are much bigger, and the private sector lending institutions are more cautious than ever when there appears to be a downturn on the horizon. So to Representative Petersburg's point, we do get a lot of these in, and I think it would be worthwhile in future committee meetings, maybe next year, to look at the TIF policy, and maybe if certain benchmarks are met, that they can just get automatic extensions for a period of time. Maybe they ought to initially start with 7 years, but I think we could lighten the load by recognizing that the dynamics are different than they were 20, 25 years ago.
Well, thank you, Representative Hertas, and we'll see if we end up with a little extra time at the end of the meeting, maybe we can have some of that discussion. But we want to make sure we get through the local officials who made time to come here. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 176? Seeing none, any summary remarks?
No, thank you, Madam Chair, for having us here. This is an exciting project, and I hope to earn the committee's support.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Herr renews her motion that House File 176 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much. And I understand that Representative Cantrell's testifiers are here now, so we will take House File 655 off the table and be able to hear from the local authorities on their proposals for the city of Burnsville. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record. Or Representative Cantrell, do you want to introduce your guests?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It is my pleasure to introduce to the members of the committee Burnsville City Mayor Elizabeth Kautz and Burnsville City Manager Melanie Melsko-Lee. And today we will be discussing the importance of establishing these TIF districts in the city of Burnsville, covering what is now kind of the Burnsville Center area and the surrounding land, as well as the Cub Foods area just north of Highway 42. I want to say that I grew up in Savage, and the Burnsville Center was my childhood mall where I spent a lot of time going around and hanging out when I was a teenager, staying out of trouble. And it, as the marketplace for retail has changed dramatically over the past decade, this is an area that has been hit particularly hard from the move away from brick-and-mortar retailers, in-person retailers, to online marketing. And so I think, my testifiers will go into greater detail about this, I think that there's a great necessity for the overall well-being of our city's economy to look at these development options. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Mayor, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Elizabeth Couts, I'm the mayor of the city of Burnsville. This is my 24th year as mayor of the city of Burnsville. And thank you so much for the opportunity to appear before you this afternoon to talk with you about this partnership with all of you, and hopefully that you would support us as we look towards the economic vitality of not just Burnsville, but our region and the state. The viability of the Burnsville Center area, as Representative Cantrell has spoken to, is the city's top and urgent priority, just because the paradigms have shifted from brick and mortar to online. It has taken a big hit. So we're looking at the whole area from County Road 5 to 35 Interstate 35 as the project area. And it is one of our first steps in achieving this objective for the city of Burnsville to approve the Burnsville Center Village Redevelopment Plan, which is a long-range framework for redevelopment of the area. This plan will guide future decision-making, investments, and priorities for transforming the area from all commercial area with large underutilized parking lots and increasing vacancies into a feasible viability mixed-use neighborhood. The city's next step, the primary goal related to our legislative request, is to put in place the tools necessary to ensure our plan is financially feasible. We know based on our discussion with mall owners that public assistance will be necessary to bridge a financial gap. Without the proper tools to engage with all ownership of the different properties, reinvestment in their assets will continue to move down the list of their priorities for properties as they look to investments in other properties they own nationwide. In addition to redevelopment of the Burnsville Shopping Center, the city anticipates some redevelopment on other parcels, but more importantly, the city anticipates significant public investment in transportation and pedestrian enhancements along the adjacent County Road 42 corridor and ring roads supporting the mall. Securing a funding source for these projects and their costs are also critical to the financial feasibility of the Burnsville Shopping Center plan.
Thank you, Mayor Coates, committee members.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Lee.
Thank you. Melanie Mescalie, Burnsville City Manager. I'd like to build a little bit on Mayor Coates' comments and talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts of what we are requesting with our proposed legislation. As you may be aware, Burnsville Shopping Center consists of 1.1 million square feet of retail. It was built 42 years ago. And there are four separate owners over five parcels. The buildings are functionally and economically obsolete. They just don't meet the statutory definition of blighted. We want to get ahead of that, which is why we're bringing this request before you today. The proposed legislation provides the flexibility necessary to ensure the city's plans for the future and surrounding 42, County Road 42 area, as the mayor noted. The request is as follows. We would like to create one or more TIF districts on certain parcels noted in the legislation. There are 36 separate parcels included. It's needed because of the unique ownership structure of the mall and the surrounding area. The parcels noted in the legislation would be deemed to meet the substandard building and coverage qualifications of a redevelopment district. We would ask that the four-year rule be extended to 10 years, which requires acquisition, demolition, or public improvements to occur on or adjacent to all the parcels within 4 years. We are asking for this because of the complex ownership as well as the significant public infrastructure needed to facilitate this redevelopment. We would also ask that they exempt expenditures between any districts created through the special legislation on the noted parcels from the 25% pooling limit to allow us to use funds within the entire district on the various parcels. And finally, we would ask that
The city has the authority to create a TIF district or districts under this legislation for the next 20 years, which would expire on June 30th, 2039. And this is due to the long-term nature of this kind of redevelopment effort.
And Madam Chair and members of the
Maynard
committee,
Knutz.
I just want to make some closing remarks before we take your questions. I can assure you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, as mayor, that we won't and don't create TIF districts just to create them. To date, and as long as the TIF districts have been authorized, we have only created 8 TIF districts, and only 2 of them are active today. And I can tell you that one of the things that we like to do is to decertify these districts as quickly as possible so that we can see the benefit of those tax growth. And we know that the things that we do benefit the state immediately, whereas our income from the property tax is a lag. So to close, we are asking for this legislation because experience has taught us that redevelopment takes time, as Ms. Mesko-Lee has spoken to. We work with developers and property owners, and they have to look at their portfolio and their financing. So it all takes time, and it takes a lot of work. I know because I've gone through redevelopments in Burnsville. We have previously asked for and received similar considerations from the legislature in the past, as have other jurisdictions. We are asking for your support and your partnership so that we can redevelop and bring economic vitality to Burnsville. And we're asking that we can create districts on a district by district in this legislation so that first in doesn't get all of the income and last in gets very little. We're also asking that we are able to pool all of the increment from the district so that we can facilitate the public improvements within the district, not outside, but within the district. And so, Madam Chair and members, that is our ask in terms of our partnership with you for the economic vitality, not only of Burnsville, but our region and state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Coutts. Are there questions? Representative Runbeck.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And so, Mayor, it sounds like what you're doing is just kind of providing enough latitude in all areas. You don't know how many districts there will be, I guess. You don't know where you'll want to do pooling, but you want to have those options available, it sounds like.
Thank
Mayor
you.
Coutts.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Runbeck. Yes, we do know there is a definition of where we're going to call the project area, but when we certify a district, we don't know. As our city manager, Mesko-Lee, has spoken to, there's 36 property owners, so how we get that done. But yes, we're asking for the authority so that we can be flexible in working with our property owners.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you very much. Any other questions by members? If not, is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify for or with concerns on House File 655? Any summary remarks, Representative Cantrell?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the members of the committee and my testifiers as well for entertaining this bill. I think that this is a phenomenal, or this project has phenomenal prospects, and I look forward to working with all of you, as well as our city leadership, to ensure that Burnsville is a wonderful place to live and work and start a business for years to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And with that, Representative McDonald renews his motion that House File 655 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks.
Our next bill is House File 220, Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 220 for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you. And with that, why don't you introduce the proposal before us?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. With me today, I have Shane Runling from the Bloomington Port Authority and Mark Fable from Goff Construction. So the city of Bloomington and McGough are seeking an exemption to the five-year rule to the Bloomington Central Station TIF district. So basically that they can continue to create high-density developments within the project area. This exemption would not extend the life or change the expiration date of the TIF district itself. It would only eliminate the five-year rule. Current five-year rule expires in April of 2020. The exemption to the five-year rule would not negatively impact state finances and would increase state property tax value in the long run, since new high-density development will pay state property taxes. So in your packet, you have a handout that goes into detail with regards to Bloomington Central Station, which really sits at the heart of our South Loop district. This is a long time in the making, folks. South Loop and Bloomington Central Station has been a topic of discussion since I served on the Bloomington City Council, and has steadily, through continued momentum, seen development. You'll see in the handout there that over $415 million worth of investment has already been made, with an estimated $600 million more in terms of potential development. So just to kind of paint a picture in terms of where this is located, before I turn this over to my testifiers to speak in greater detail as to the reasons why they need this exemption to the five-year rule, this particular area sits just to the east of the Mall of America, south of the airport, and then the Minnesota River Valley runs along the southern border. So it's a very unique area within our community that has seen just amazing development. And when we talk development, we're not really talking development. We're talking redevelopment. Something has to go away before something new can be built. And if we are to achieve the densities that are really essential for this type of area, TIF plays an important role in that. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers. Gentlemen.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Shane Rudlang, and I administer the Bloomington Port Authority, which is an economic development arm of the city of Bloomington. I'll be brief in my statements before I turn it over to Mark Grable with McGough to talk a little bit more about the development. But in a nutshell, the reason that the city and the developer and the Bloomington legislative delegation are interested in this exemption to the five-year rule is because this is a 50-acre project that simply is spread out over roughly 12 phases, and to do a 50-acre project of 12 phases takes longer than 5 years, it takes longer than 10 years, and certainly with recessions and other economic downturns sandwiched in the long-term length of the TIF district, you simply can't do projects in 5 years. And so we're seeking an exemption from the five-year rule. We're not seeking an extension of the TIF district life or any of the other TIF requirements. We're just seeking an exemption from the five-year rule so that we can continue to build the projects that we built to date, of which are outlined in your packet. I'd also like to note that a couple of the projects that we've done most recently, one that was opened a year and a half ago and one that will open in about a year, do have some workforce and affordable housing in them, and we will continue to do that. It's a big goal of the City Council and the Port Authority to provide affordable housing. So this TIF district exemption to the five-year rule, should it pass, would help us achieve that goal. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mark Fable.
Meeting, Mr. Fable.
Madam Chair, representatives. Again, my name is Mark Fable with McGough Development. I've been working on Bloomington Central Station since December of 2001. And
how old are you?
I know, right? It's been a labor of love, I guess, right? The project is a high-density, mixed-use development made up of residential for-sale condominiums, market-rate and affordable rental apartments, hospitality, hotels, restaurants, and retail, and then corporate office as well. To date, since December of 2001, we first went through an exercise of a lot of master planning, working through the city process, entitlements, and then ultimately the certification of the TIF district. Up until 2019 to today, we've completed 5 to 6 phases, if you include our park, and that's condominiums, 2 phases of rental apartments, and a hotel, and that's about half of the project, and it's taken us 19 years to get there. So we still have another half of the project, 6 more phases, another $600 million of construction to complete, And with that, as Shane mentioned, it's our goal to incorporate a diversity of housing options for the people that work in this area, including affordable and workforce housing, which the tax increment financing will be a tremendous tool to allow that to happen. And again, I think we obviously appreciate all the work that's gone in to date. If you think about six more phases, you can't just go build them all at one time because they're either they're office or they're all housing. It takes about 2 to 3 years to build a project and to lease up the project before you can even contemplate building the next one. So even if we did have six projects and you think 3 to 4 years for each project, you can see why it makes it challenging to stay within the five-year rule, which is why we're asking for the exemption to allow for all phases to be completed and have a successful project. The scale of this project, when you think about it, you hear a lot about the Ford site in St. Paul. It's about a $1 billion project. When completed, this will also be about a $1 billion project. I think that's just to put that in reference and scale. It's a small downtown environment, really located next to adjacent public infrastructure with the transit line and the freeway system. So that's the right place to be building high density. So thank you for your time today.
Great. Are there questions? Representative Hurt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I can't remember the gentleman you just spoke. Your name is Mr.
Fable.
Mr. Fable. So you had mentioned that some of the units are affordable rental units, and I was just curious as to the percentage of those affordable units compared to what's the percentage of all units. And then when we say affordable, we've had a lot of kind of, you know, difference between what is affordable and the definitions of what affordable housing is. And can you tell me what would be the average rent of one of those affordable units?
Mr. Fable.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative, I think the best way to answer that question, I think, is just the terminology that we all hear. I understand that it's different terminology. In general, so far, our phases of affordability have been at 80% of the AMI. And right now, the project that we're working on, which we hope to be about 200 more units, will be approximately at 60% of AMI, which is, again, we're making continued progress in being able to deliver more affordability into more of the residential projects. And our goal is to deliver 200 units in our next phase of that.
Representative Hurt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up. Mr. Fable, so can you tell me then, for those who may not be familiar with 80% AMI or 60% AMI, just what is an average unit's rent that would be considered affordable?
Mr. Fable.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, at this time I don't have that data in front of me. I don't know it off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
You can always provide it later. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just a comment. I had the opportunity to tour that recently and get a personalized tour of the project, and it is going very well, and it's a well-deserved project, and they're making all their benchmarks, so I would support this project.
Thank you. Any other questions? I have a question. You know, the key for a TIF district is but for. The development wouldn't have happened but for the public financing. And when you've got $400 million of momentum building and a light rail line that's going to soon stop in front of it, if you could explain a little bit more what the public investment is here that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Madam Chair and representatives of the committee, so in essence, or in truth, the public investment goes for parking and infrastructure to support the projects. And each one of these projects is different. And whether the developers like it or not, Bloomington has a team of people that look very closely at the financials of each of the projects and do the but-for test. And then gauge and apply the subsidy per phase depending on what that bears out. So we pay for parking and infrastructure based on internal rates of return and other factors based on each project.
And Mr. Babel.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representatives. I think Representative Carlson described it really well, and he talked about how this is a redevelopment, and we are taking a use that was built and successful at one point in time. And in this case, it was the original Control Data Headquarters facility, and there were 5 to 6 different buildings out there that served the manufacturing and the office for Control Data. And when we first acquired the property, as part of our early activities, we had to demolish over 1.5 million square feet of office and manufacturing facilities to rebuild can create new infrastructure for a new development. And, I mean, essentially imagine a small downtown. So all of the demolition of the existing facilities, the environmental abatement work, and now then the rebuilding of the new roads, the new sewer, the stormwater, all those things that are very expensive early on in a project to be able to allow for that density to be built later had to happen up front. So I think when you think about the but-for analysis, it's the extensive repositioning of an existing site at a lower density into a much higher density site to serve a greater number of people in a location that is well-served with public infrastructure.
Great. Any other questions? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify for or with concerns about House File 220? Don't see that. Representative Carlson, would you like to make some concluding remarks while you and then renew your motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So, you know, a lot of talk about new fancy buildings, but really what we're doing here is we're building a community is what we're doing. We're building a new neighborhood, basically a small downtown within the city of Bloomington. Just on the, I hope I'm not incorrect in this, but the fact that this development area is within proximity to the airport, I believe all the stormwater retention ponds have to be below ground, because waterfowl can't have, they would pose a hazard to flights. So there's unique infrastructure
and acoustics,
thank you very much, that have to be incorporated as part of the infrastructure that go into redeveloping the area. So I hope that's not an incorrect statement. Okay, great. So thank you, Madam Chair and Committee Members, for hearing this bill today. What am I doing next? I am
renewing
my motions for House File 220. Be moved for possible inclusion in the vision report.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for coming. And the bill is laid over. Representative Runbeck has a question on this.
I have kind of a silly question, but you mentioned controlled data, and, you know, I'm old. I remember controlled data. Are you putting any kind of memorial to, you know, that company somewhere in that on that site?
Mr. Fable, is there a memorial included in your plan?
Madam Chair, memorial sounds so dire.
Yeah.
We actually have had many conversations with some of the alumni who have come back to talk to us about incorporating some sort of a visual to remember the amazing company that Controlia was. We also, at for one time, along the transit station, had a binary code as part of the design for the platform pavers. So we have talked about it. We have not yet incorporated that into the project, but there is a team of alumni that are interested as well to memorialize, if that's the right word, the control data business.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for that additional information. We are going to move to our last bill, House File 1427, Representative Baker.
And I'll move the bill, Madam Chair.
Representative Runbeck moves House File 1427 to bring it before the committee for consideration and possible inclusion in the division report. Welcome to the committee, Representative Baker and guests, and please introduce us to your proposal.
Madam Chair and members, thank you very much. I'm very proud today to introduce our team of collaborators from Wilmer. Wilmer is a regional center just straight west of here, about 120 miles. It's a community full of collaborators. They want to get things done because we know that rural Minnesota needs to get quality of life is a big part of why they want to stay in rural Minnesota. So we've got a great group of people working back at home. I wanted to recognize a few of the members that were here today, too, that have been working on the Wilmer project. City staff Steve Okins and Rob Baumgartner here. Council member Nelson is here, as well as former state representative Mary Swatsky is with us as well, and they're all part of the Invest in Wilmer team. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to our mayor and let the two let loose on it. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor, and please introduce yourself for the tape.
Yes, my name is Mark Kelvin, mayor for the city of Wilmer, and I'm pleased to be here to present to you, Madam Chair and committee. Today, what we are presenting to you is an Invest in Wilmer project, which is a local option sales tax project that will fund six different areas of focus within the city of Wilmer. This is a true grassroots-driven project, and I have Matt Dawson here with me, and he'll explain the project in depth. But I want to talk a little bit about the history of local option sales tax use in Wilmer. Wilmer had a local option sales tax use that was for a library, and actually was the first local option sales tax project that was sunsetted in the state of Minnesota. And we also had a second one that talked about some of our civic center needs and also talked about some economic development with an industrial park. And so we have a grassroots group that's working back home on this, as Representative Baker talked about. We have 42 people on a committee that work on this, and each of the individual projects have a committee that works under them. So then it gets to the council for approval. So with that, Madam Chair, I would like to introduce Matt Dawson to present the projects that we have in front of you.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Dawson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matt Dawson. I'm a Willmar citizen who was involved with the grassroots effort to help provide plans and funding to upgrade the facilities in the city of Willmar. We are seeking your support to implement the local option tax for a half cent to raise $30 million plus financing costs over 13 years or whichever comes first for the six projects. A community center, an event center, recreation fields, Robbins Island Regional Park upgrades, Swanson Field Regional Park upgrades, and stormwater infrastructure. With a population of almost 20,000, we are a regional center and we feel it's time to fund and invest in our facilities so we can upgrade our services and offerings. These improvements will help businesses attract and retain customers and employees to our community and provide opportunities for seniors and young families. They will help with economic growth and residential and commercial development as we continue to work hard to attract and retain people and business to West Central Minnesota. The facilities also will give our newly formed Willmar Park and Rec Department the opportunity to facilitate more programming for local and the surrounding community's citizens. Our community-based grassroots effort that passed this vote with a 61% majority in November, something we are very proud of, and we look forward to making our city a better place to live, work, and visit. Thank you for this opportunity, and we gladly take any questions. We appreciate your support.
Great. Are there any questions? I see none. Anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 1427? Come on up if you'd like to. Okay. I guess not. And with that, any concluding remarks, Representative Baker?
Madam Chair, members, no. We want to get it quick to the point, and thank you very much for your time, and we appreciate your support today. Thank you.
And with that, Representative Runbeck renews her motion that House File 1427 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report of property taxes. Thank you. And members, we do now have a little extra time to engage in the discussion that Representative Petersburg and Representative Hertaus suggested about general approaches to tax increment financing. And Representative Petersburg, maybe you want to get it started off.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, mainly, I need to start getting a little bit more information. Do we know from staff how many of these exemptions have been done over the course of the last few years? Because I think if we are finding that there's a trend in which the limitations that we have are not realistic or are always being extended, maybe the development and the amount of time it takes to develop these is growing to the point where our current laws are obsolete. And I think that's one of the places where I think we should start in discussion.
Does our staff have a good feel for how many come out for exceptions versus not? And
Madam Chair, I do have a list here from the Office of the State Auditor of all the special laws that have been passed going back to the 80s, so I can provide the committee with a breakdown of what those laws were and in what year that happened. But generally, it seems as though there's a good handful, up to 8-10 bills per year that come before the committee.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Well, thank you. I think that would be helpful to have some time for us to review. And then the question becomes also goes around to what is the overall benefit of extending versus from extending these deadlines, especially those that would get recertified, and what does that impact in the state's responsibility to help out with local government aid and others as well, I think would be helpful for discussion. And once I think when we have some of that information, it would allow us to really have a better handle on how we want to move forward from here. But I'll turn it over to others for questions too. I just think it's probably worthwhile for us to discuss it.
Great. Representative Berthaus.
No, I really don't have any more to add to that. I made my comments earlier. I think that the is an issue that we should revisit, and like I say, probably next year would be the time to do it.
And Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, I have a question, but it's not regarding this topic, so maybe
at the end.
At the end. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if we've got 1,600 TIF districts, is that what I heard earlier? Mm-hmm. And we've only got 8 or 10 bills a year, maybe it's not as big of a problem as we thought.
Yeah. Ms. Hagler is confirming those numbers.
Yes, Madam Chair, as of December 2017, there were 1,651 districts in the state.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's up to the discretion of Madam Chair. I mean, if there isn't significant enough, that's fine. It just seemed like we're getting more and more through the years, and that just seemed like getting a bigger issue, and that's something for you to decide. I rely on you.
And Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I'm reacting from being in this committee 7 years ago. In the depths of the recession, that's all we were hearing were TIF extensions.
Oh, yeah.
And it continued on until the economy started to pick up. And I suspect for all of them that are being approved, if the economy does take a downturn, we'll be visiting a lot of them again. Thank you.
Thank you. What I have heard, and none of them, and no one was anticipating this general discussion, but I have heard concerns from some of the other taxing jurisdictions about when communities get too much into TIF, how much that takes away from the operating budgets of the schools and the counties, and that's why I think we have some guardrails around how long they can take the properties off the general tax rolls and the rules, and that's why we have to individually look at each of these projects to see do they really need to be extended or should some of the additional increment be shared with some of the other taxing jurisdictions, because they all want to see their tax base growing and they want to see that in their operating budget. So the other question I think that some of these bring forward too is just whether or not our current definition of blight in statute fits for the types of projects that we're getting, because we're getting some proposals that don't meet the traditional definition of blight, which is you have polluted site, or you have a site that's economically not at all viable, it's been vacant for a long period of time, and you have to knock it down and deal with the asbestos and all those other sorts of things. And some proposals have a harder time and come to us for an exception for that. And so it's a tool that's been useful, and it's been used for a long time to create a lot of new exciting things in a lot of communities. And but we do continue to see these requests for an extension or for these. And I don't know, we should maybe, as we review these to make the final decisions, look at if there's some general policies that we think need updating or changing. Any other comments? If not, we look forward to... Oh, Representative McDonald, you had another point. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just question procedurally. I see we're coming back tonight to see some more important bills. And it seems as though, what time is our normal scheduled time in this hearing?
Representative McDonald, our normal is till 2:15, 12:45 to 2:15. Some of our presentations didn't use all the time that we allotted for them, so we're done a little early. Our schedule is tonight to meet at 6 o'clock or 45 minutes after we adjourn, which we do not think is going to be necessary today, but the floor is always totally unpredictable for many of us.
So, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative McDonald.
So I'm just curious as to just procedurally why we wouldn't take the 15 minutes of time and see some more bills instead of having to cram them in tonight. You know how some schedules are, other committees are back-to-back and some members aren't able to make them both. And is that something that we'll be doing so going forward each Monday?
Representative McDonald, last Monday and this Monday, we scheduled all of the local government exception bills and special bills We'll have a few more coming when we talk about local government aid. But we did reach out to all of the local government officials that would be calling and asked, particularly those from Greater Minnesota, if it would be easier for them to get here by 12:45 or to the evening session. And we gave everyone an opportunity to have 8 minutes to present and respond to questions. And so we've really tried to make it so that we wouldn't have people who came in the afternoon session having to stay until 6 o'clock to present. And, you know, when we can, when the authors are available, we'll move things up. But it's harder when you've got local elected officials coming in from throughout the state to testify about the projects in their community.
Very good, Madam Chair. Just wanted to ask the question. Thank you.
Yeah, we're trying to be accommodating when we can because we know many of these local officials, this is not their full-time job, and they're taking a day off and they're traveling to tell us about what's happening in their community. So we're going to honor that whenever we can. Any other business before the committee? Otherwise, we will adjourn or recess until the time of 6 o'clock or 45 minutes after session adjourns. Thank you. I would like to again call the Property Tax Division to order. And thank you very much, everyone, for showing up. We do have a number of committees that are meeting at the same time, so we'll have members coming in and out as they present bills and other committees. And I wanted to explain to the public and to our guests from the local governments presenting today, we're kind of in an unusual circumstance in that the House met in formal session at 3:30, and then we recessed, and we are still in recess waiting for some legislation to come over from the Senate that is timely for us to act on it this evening. So at some point, we will be given 15 minutes notice to go back into floor session to vote. It's my hope that we can work through these fairly quickly and be able to complete our work before that happens. But I'm not any better at predicting the future and the actions of the Senate than anyone. So we're just going to get started and go through. And what I've asked members to do is to, if they can, hold most of their questions so that we can follow up with the cities afterwards and get the information, and we'll share it with all the committee members. But we really don't want people to have traveled in from their city and not get a chance to present. So if people are agreeable to that, that's what we're going to do. And our first bill is House File 164. Representative Olson, please come up with your testifiers. And while they're coming up, you'll see this handout that's in front of everyone. It was kind of a late submission. This is for House File 1436, the Two Harbors Bill. The piece of paper doesn't have the bill number on it, but if you want to put that in your packet for 1436, that's the bill that it fits with. So welcome to the committee, Representative Olson, and we do now have a quorum. Representative Hewitt, would you like to move House File 164 to get it before the committee?
Madam Chair, I would.
Thank you. House File 164 is before the committee, and for everyone in the audience to know, the tradition in this division is that we, in the end, lay bills over for possible inclusion in our property tax report. We do not make a final decision today. Today is to get information from the affected municipalities. And with that, welcome, Representative Olson, and please tell us a little bit about your proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House File 164 establishes authority for a tax increment financing district to remedy impediments to development for an important piece of property on the Duluth waterfront. Lot D, as this property is known, is a prime location for development and job creation. However, the property will require significant redevelopment investment, such as the removal of foundations and abandoned infrastructure before it can be redeveloped. We have a witness from the city who can describe the property in more detail, but the key issue here is that development is not practical unless we have the resources that would be provided via a tax increment financing redevelopment district. With that, Madam Chair, I would invite Duluth Community Development Manager Keith Hamry to provide some additional information and answer questions the committee may have.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hamry. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Keith Hamry. I'm the Director of Planning and Economic Development for the city.
and also the Executive Director of the Duluth Economic Development Authority. The Duluth Economic Development Authority has owned Lot D for 25 years. This is a 10-acre site located adjacent to Bayfront Park and Pier B on the Duluth waterfront. It's the last piece of property that can be developed for this type of mixed-use, commercial, residential use, and also public access to the waterfront. We currently, as Representative Olson explained, we have a lot of infrastructure that's been abandoned on site. We have a series of foundations that are on the site from previous uses, industrial waterfront uses, and clearly site preparation is an eligible tax increment financing use of funds. But the district that we are looking to create would be a redevelopment district. This site does not qualify for a redevelopment district at this point because there are no structures standing. But all of the other tests would be met as far as occupancy and obsolescence of the facilities that are on the site. This has really been a quintessential meeting of the but-for test in the fact that development has not happened but for assistance. And currently the price tag for remediation and associated site prep is approximately $13 million, which that type of price tag is what's made this site undevelopable at this point, even though there's a lot of pent-up demand for development. So with that, Madam Chair, if there's any questions.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Is there anyone from the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 164? If not, any summary comments, Representative Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you. And with that, the Hewitt renews his motion to lay over House File 164 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division report. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And members, we're going to skip next to House File 1436, Representative Murphy. We're waiting for some updated language on House File 1766.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 1436 will authorize Two Harbors to carry out the will of the people that voted in 2018 for an increased sales tax. They have half a cent now, and they want it to go to 1 cent, up to $30 million. So that they can buy infrastructure for water and street maintain their water and streets and get them up to par for the 21st century. Mayor Chris Swanson is with me, and he can tell you all the details you need to know.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And I was so distracted by a potential message about reconvening that I forgot to have someone move the bill. Representative Marquardt, would you move House File 1436, please?
I will move House File 1436 for possible inclusion into the division report.
Thank you. It is now officially before us. Welcome, Mayor, and thank you for coming to tell us about your project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Chris Swanson, as Representative Murphy said. I'm down from the North Shore. In the interest of time, I won't talk about our great beer at Castle Danger Brewery, our great pies, Betty's Pies, our smoked fish, but you're all welcome to come up and visit anytime. We had a unique situation. Our infrastructure is fairly broken. I know that no other city in the state has that issue. We are unique in that our area is rock and clay. We are located, as you know, right on the shores of Lake Superior, which creates a very excessive cost as we go out to do road improvements. So what we are suggesting this dollar is going to be used for, this money is going to be used for, is really for underground infrastructure. We still do assessments. The city still participates in all this. This just helps us get these projects completed so that we can keep moving forward with our city's capital improvement plan. So with that, in the interest of the reconvening that might happen, I'll just keep it short and ask if there's any questions.
Great. Any questions from members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for with concerns on House File 1436? Oh, I'm sorry, we do have a question. Representative Vang, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Seeing like this is also a pretty high need in your district, are you seeking any other funds?
Yes, we are. We have a city campground that we use funds from, but primarily we bond all these projects. So really, this will raise about $300,000 a year, we estimate, and that's used to offset bond cost.
Great. Once again, is there anyone from the public who would like to testify on this proposal? If not, any summary comments, Representative Murphy?
I appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. And with that, Representative Marcourt, I had to think who moved this one, renews this motion that House File 1436 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
All right. Okay, Representative Gunther, House File 1766. Representative Gunther?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move 1766.
Thank you. House File 1766 is now before us for consideration. And we have a new draft of the bill in front of us. It's just being handed out. Representative Gunther, why don't you explain your proposal?
House File 1766 is a 0.5% sales tax increase for the city of Blue Earth, Minnesota. The city administrator couldn't come here because we have a big storm going down in the southern part of the state. And they call all the schools off, so he says, I better stay home. So this half bond, 0.5% up to $5 million is for infrastructure in the sewage treatment plant improvements and street reconstruction projects and recreational amenities in the city of Blue Earth. And they had a vote on it, and it passed very, very strongly. The people with Blue Earth would very much like to pay the extra money.
Thank you, Representative Gunther. And are there any questions from members? Anyone from the audience who would like to testify on House File 1766? If not, Representative Runbeck renews her motion. Any summary remarks, Representative Gunther?
I know the people of Blue Earth would very much like to have this passed because they don't want to get too far in debt, and this is one way they can help them out of it.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Runbeck's motion to lay this over for possible conclusion is acted on.
Thank you very much.
And we are making great progress. Thank you, members. House File 1550, Representative Becker Finn.
Madam Chair, so moved. So moved.
Moves House File 1550 to be before the committee for consideration. Welcome to the committee, Representative Becker Finn. Please tell us about your proposal.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm actually going to defer to my testifier. I think he can get right to the point and we'll sum up what we're trying to do here for the city of Roseville tonight.
Fantastic. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Pat Frudgett. I'm the city manager for the city of Roseville. We appreciate the opportunity to come in front of you this evening to talk about our request to use funds that have already been collected in the city of Roseville as part of the Hazardous Substance Subdistrict, or HSS, 17A district in Roseville. The bill introduced by Representative Becker Finn will allow the city to access dollars that have already been collected as part of the HSS TIF district since its creation in 2006 and use it for environmental remediation and cleanup in our Twin Lakes redevelopment area. Due to the economic downturn as part of the Great Recession, Roseville was not able to attract development and thus clean up the property in the Twin Lakes redevelopment area within the time frame required under state law. As a result, this means we can only access a quarter of the funds that we have collected for environmental cleanup of the land. We now have several pending proposals in front of us in Twin Lakes that will bring housing and over 700 jobs and corporate headquarters. These sites do have verified environmental cleanup and remediation needs. With the current restrictions in the law, we can only use $858,000 of the $3.1 million we have collected. So that is why we're here tonight, to ask for your support in this legislation to allow us to use the remaining balance so that we can put those funds towards environmental remediation. House File 1550 will allow us to access slightly more than $2.2 million. We've already verified $1.35 million of cleanup costs, and we expect some more as we go through the process here. This bill will allow us to access those dollars. At the end of that process, once we have those identified costs, we would return any unspent funds to the taxing authorities. We would look to decertify this district actually earlier. Currently, it's set for 2031. If we're able to get this bill passed, we would be able to apply those funds immediately, and we would decertify at the end of 2019, 11 years earlier than expected, and put that back on the tax roll. So, in short, we're looking to extend the length of time we can collect increment. In fact, we're looking to shorten it. This bill will allow us to use the existing funds and help us clean up in this area and decertify the district. Thank you again, Chair, and we appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you and look forward to your support as this process moves forward.
Thank you very much. And do members have any questions? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify in House File 1550? There isn't. So, Representative Breckerfin, any summary comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is kind of the last piece in a development area in Roseville, very much needed. And again, we wouldn't be taking any new funds. We'd just be using the funds that are already there for the purpose that's already been stated. So thank you very much for your time and support.
Thank you. And Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1550 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. House File 1193, Representative Elkins. Mm-hmm. And a little dessert is being shared. Representative Bernardi, would you like to move House File 1193 to get it before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would. So moved.
Thank you. Welcome, Representative Elkins. Please share with us the proposal before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a very innovative proposal to a program that funds affordable housing in the city of Edina, and I have with me the city manager, Scott Neal, who's going to explain the program.
Thank you, Representative
Welcome,
Elkins.
Welcome, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Representative Elkins, Madam Chair. In 2014, the state legislature authorized some special legislation for my city to use the excess tax increment from a district that we call the Southdale 2 TIF district, which was an area around the Southdale Center Mall, for the benefit of affordable housing. So we have had the good fortune to see a great deal of development around the mall during the past 5 years. It's created a great deal of tax increment. We wish to continue to use this tax increment for affordable housing purposes. That legislation, however, expired at the end of 2019. The legislation that we're asking for this year is to extend the deadline to use those funds from 2019 to 2021. That termination date coincides with the expiration of the Southdale 2 TIF district itself. So we're not asking for the TIF district to be extended any longer than its natural life. Just that we'd be able to use this special authority to the end of its natural life. The other element of the legislation we're asking for is that it allows priced housing development within the boundaries of the Southeast Edina redevelopment project to be considered in district expenses for TIF purposes. This would remove the limitation on pooling and would eliminate the requirement to create additional new TIF districts within the larger TIF district itself, which is has some bureaucratic issues with it. So that's what we're looking for. This is our we feel is a noble purpose. The Metropolitan Council has given us some deadlines and some targets to hit in terms of creating affordable housing units in our city, and we're just trying to do our best with our own resources to meet those targets and deadlines. Thank you.
Thank you. And there are a couple of handouts that have been provided by the committee in your packet. Any questions by members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on House File 1193? Please come up and introduce yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Lori Groats, and I'm against House File number 1193. When this TIF district expires, there will be about $15 million in tax increment in there. I would like to see the monies go back to the jurisdictions where they need to go back. Especially I'm looking at the schools. About 40% of the monies would go back to the schools. My question is, and it's not clear in the description here, there's the Richfield School District is in this Southdale 2 TIF District and also the Edina School District. I would like to know what percentage of the monies would be going to Richfield, to the Richfield schools, and what percentage would be going to Edina. I don't see that in here.
Thank you. I think that we wouldn't have the exact percentages, but our staff might be able to explain how it is generally divided when there's two school districts involved.
Madam Chair, I'm not exactly sure on how that works, but I can look into it and get back to the committee.
Okay. Thank you. We can do that. We didn't anticipate that question.
Oh, I see. Okay, because when the TIF district expires, then whatever was the county money goes back to them if it hasn't been used. What is in the school district goes to the school district. What is in goes to the city goes back to the city. So I just assumed if 50% of the monies were in the Richfield School District that they would get 50% of those TIF dollars back for their school district. Thank you.
Maybe our city manager knows the answer.
Madam Chair, I think I can answer that question. This, in the geographic area of the Southdale 2 TIF district, I would estimate tonight it's probably about 50-50. I'd say about 50% of that geography is in the Edina School District. About 50% of that geography is in the Richfield School District. That's a, yeah, it's a good faith estimate.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you for testifying. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? If not, one more. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Arnie Bigby, and I live in the Southdale area in a neighborhood called Edinburgh. And at one time in the past, this was considered an area that was developed with affordable housing in mind. I myself grew up in Minneapolis in affordable housing in the Glendale Housing Projects. Fortunately, got some help getting a college, getting a great career, and now live in Edina. I'm very proud of that. I'm also very proud of what Edina has done, and especially in the last 5 years, in taking on affordable housing and shouldering their responsibility for solving this issue and this problem that exists really for everyone in the entire state of Minnesota. And Edina is making good progress on that now, and having these funds available to support the affordable housing initiatives that are being taken, it would be really great. We now have an affordable housing development manager in the city, along with other resources that are making that very possible. So I am very enthused about this bill, and also the sheet that you had from Edina Neighbors for Affordable Housing. I belong to that group. We have about 100 very interested citizens just supporting the city council and the city and all the things that they're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bigby. With that, any concluding remarks, Representative Elkins?
No, I just would like to support and urge the committee to support this program. It's, I think, a very exemplary program thing that Edina is doing in using TIF money from development to promote affordable housing in their city.
Great. And with that, Representative Bernardi renews her motion to lay over House File 671 for possible inclusion, or 1193 for possible inclusion of the division report. Thank you very much. We are reconvening at 6:30, so we're going to we're doing great, folks. We're going to take up House File 671 and try and make it a successful evening and getting through the full agenda before we reconvene. Welcome to the committee, Representative Lee and Representative Hewitt moves that House File 671 be brought before the committee for consideration for possible inclusion. Please introduce your proposal and your witnesses.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to present House File 671. This is regarding a redevelopment project, the Upper Harbor Terminal in my district by the Mississippi River, and I just want to let members of the committee know that last year Representative Draskowski included this in the Property Tax Division report. Unfortunately, it didn't make it through all the way, and so that's why we're back here before you, and I would like to turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Ann Calvert with the City of Minneapolis Community Planning and Economic Development Division, and I'm the co-project manager. I'm joined by Matthew Hendricks in our Development Finance Department. I'd like to, does everybody have one of the handouts by now? Mm-hmm. I'd like to direct you to there because this is a story that needs some pictures to tell it. Starting with number two, which kind of illustrates where the site is. This is a 48-acre site that the City of Minneapolis has owned and operated as a barge shipping terminal for decades, and we now want to redevelop it for riverfront parkland and inland private development. But as you can see, the site has a lot of assets, one of which is a mile of riverfront in Mississippi River, but a lot of project needs, including a power line that needs to be relocated, a lot of dilapidated buildings, a lack of infrastructure. And on pages 3 and 4, you can kind of get a sense of where the site is located. On 4, you see we're just north of Lowry, if you know where the Lowry and Camden Avenue bridges are, we're between those in North Minneapolis, which is an area that we very much want to give a boost to with private development. The industrial heritage sheet on page 5 gives you an idea what's on the site now, and what some of the challenges are is that we have a lot of very dilapidated structures, but they are not buildings under the tax increment district definitions. We also have a power line that goes over the site that really limits its development, but there isn't anything about blighting influences from a power line in the tax increment district. And in addition, we have the fact that the barge shipping was closed down by the federal government in 2015 as a limiting factor. On slide.
And Ms. Calvert, just so you know, you can talk a little slower because we've just gotten word that now we won't be reconvening till 7. So,
thank you.
Take a breath.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Edit as I go here. So on slide 6, you can see where that power line is that I mentioned. And this is a power line that serves downtown Minneapolis from the Riverside Plant across the river, which is where Representative Leffler's district is. We cannot get rid of that line, but we very much want to relocate it, and that's going to cost us several million dollars. So that's another of the factors that we have. I do want to note, I think maybe you might have seen the press, that the Minneapolis Council did approve last Friday a concept plan for the site. And there is a lot of ways that we need to go still with the community and with the development team to come up with a final plan. But what I want to reinforce today is that no matter what happens on the site for redevelopment, we need infrastructure because the streets are either non-existent or in very poor condition. We need utilities. We need that power line relocated. And last year, the legislature was good enough to give us a $15 million grant to the city and the park board to get started on this development. We very much would like to have tax increment as one of the important tools to help fully fund with the city's match to do the work that we need to do. So now we're going to turn it over to Matthew, and he'll walk you through the specifics of the bill.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Matthew Hendricks, Senior Finance Analyst for the City of Minneapolis, and I'm here to walk through some of the provisions of the bill. There are 4 subdivisions, and the first 2 subdivisions deal with getting the district qualified. As Ann mentioned, there are many structures on the site that are quite significant structures. They're industrial in size and nature for moving and storing commodities. But they wouldn't necessarily qualify as buildings or as substandard buildings under the current tax code. And so that's one of the issues that those first 2 subdivisions address. The other issue is that much of the site was used for storing bulk commodities outdoors, and the surface is a mix of paved surface, gravel, and just plain dirt. And so this dealing with the occupancy test that says for redevelopment districts, that 70% of the site must be occupied is also part of what those first two subdivisions do. Redevelopment of the Upper Harbor Terminal site will very likely take more than 5 years from start to finish because of the size of the site and some of the challenges there. And so the third subdivision deals with the timing. There's currently in the state statute a rule that says that from the start of a TIF district until all the bonding or lending is in place, all of that has to happen within 5 years. And this third subdivision extends that timeline to 10 years. And finally, the fourth subdivision deals with pooling. So there are some major pieces of infrastructure that would be very inefficient to handle on a parcel-by-parcel basis. For example, moving the power lines would most efficiently be done all at once. Some of the street segments would be most efficiently rebuilt in larger segments than just as each parcel is developed. And so the pooling is meant to facilitate the infrastructure work that needs to be done. And so that's what Subdivision 4 addresses. There's a map in the materials that shows the area within which the pooling would be enabled, according to the language in the bill. And it's within an existing project area. The section of that project area north of Lowry is what is proposed, and that's the North Washington Industrial Park project area. The map also shows that with hash markings where the Upper Harbor Terminal parcels are, and in red it shows the road reconstruction projects, and in orange you can see the power line that exists on the site today. As we've noted, the site presents a great opportunity for the city of Minneapolis, but it's certainly a complex and challenging redevelopment project, and tax increment financing will be a critical tool to finance the needed public improvements, but some flexibility from the general TIF laws is very important at this location. Thank you again for the opportunity to be before you today, and we're happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hendricks. And are there questions for members? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious on your relics park, how will what will that consist of?
Ms. Calvert.
Thank you. Relics Park will be retaining a couple of the big domes that are there for possible future reuse. Well, we're retaining a couple of big domes. The area next to it is what we're calling Relics Park. The Relics Park will basically be a park that the Park Board has yet to design, but they're next to the relics that will be preserved for reuse. A couple of the big domes.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, my when I first started in the photography business 30 years ago, a Reedy Photo was a lab that I used down on Washington Avenue, so I would pass this often when I drove from Delano down to Reedy Photo, delivering my film and then picking up the finished photographs back in the film days. So how would this dome, which were always a good icon and landmark to be, how would that be used to enhance that area?
Well, from the studies
Ms.
we've done...
Delbert.
Yes. Thank you. From the studies we've done, they're very dilapidated on the outside, but they're in very good shape structurally. And so we're hoping that once we get development going on the site and there's some amenities on there, the development team has had discussions with, brew pub folks and a skate park, different people who might be interested in using them for something that they don't want to get too serious about committing to anything until we get a little more momentum going with the development. So we're hopeful We'll stabilize them and keep them safe in the meantime, but then hopefully that we'll find some very interesting use that will complement the rest of the site.
Right. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on House File 1193? Oh, 671, I'm sorry. Had the other bill in front of me here. On House File 671. Seeing not, any concluding remarks, Representative Lee?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present House File 671. I appreciate the community support.
Thank you. And with that, the motion to lay this over for possible inclusion on the division report is renewed, and it is laid over. And I just want to say thank you, members, for helping us get through so that we could get through all of our bills tonight before we headed back to the floor. And thank you to our guests who came and were concise. so that we could get through hearing everyone. Thank you very much. And with that, the committee is adjourned.